Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. New York lawmakers have wrapped up their legislative session, but not everyone is celebrating. Grassroots advocacy group For the Many says Albany missed key opportunities on housing, immigration, and taxing the wealthy. We'll learn about what got done, what didn't, and what it means for New Yorkers. New SNAP rules are in effect in New York. What to know if you lost benefits? We'll bring you all the information for SNAP recipients in New York on the changing work requirements. And it's Invasive Species Awareness Week. We talked to the director of the Catskill Regional Invasive Species Partnership about the biggest threats facing the region's forests and waterways and how you can stop the spread. Plus, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. It's coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Iran says it's halting further attacks on Israel for now. Iran fired at Israel yesterday. That came as Israel continued to attack Iran's proxy militia, Hezbollah, in Lebanon. Israel returned fire on Iran as well. Today, President Trump wrote online, both Israel and Iran are looking to do a, quote, ceasefire. He also said the U.S. will continue to blockade Iranian ports until a final deal is reached. Pakistan's interior minister has handed over a letter meant for the Iranian supreme leader. NPR's Dia Hadid reports this comes amid renewed Pakistani efforts to mediate talks between Iran and the U.S. while fighting has been flaring.
Interior Minister Mohsen Naqvi left for Tehran on Saturday night. During his visit, state-supported Iranian media reported that Naqvi gave a message to the Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi. Iranian media reported that the message was from the Army Chief Qasem Manir to the Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Sayyid Mujtaba Khamenei. Naqvi has visited Iran in the past to push for mediated talks, but the last effort appeared to collapse after the U.S. and Iran could not agree on the fate of the Strait of Hormuz and Iran's enriched uranium stockpiles. In a related development, the Lebanese Chief of Army Staff also visited Pakistan over the weekend at the invitation of Pakistan's Army Chief. It was not clear how long the visit would last or even its purpose. Dia Hadid, NPR News.
Stocks open higher this morning as oil prices stabilized. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 200 points in early trading.
Oil prices jumped overnight as Israel and Iran traded attacks, but crude oil prices stabilized after Iran said the skirmish was ending. Retail gasoline prices in the U.S. continue to fall. AAA says the average price of regular gas is about $4.16 a gallon. That's down about 16 cents from a week ago, but still more than a dollar a gallon higher than this time last year. Gasoline prices will likely play a significant role later this week when the Labor Department reports on inflation for the month of May. Stock in computer chip maker Marvell Technology got a boost this morning after a sell-off Friday in companies tied to artificial intelligence. Marvell is set to join the S&P 500 index later this month. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Health officials in Africa warn the Ebola outbreak in Democratic Republic of the Congo is spreading. There are 488 confirmed cases in DRC and nearly 90 confirmed deaths. Reporter Emmett Livingstone is in DRC's capital, Kinshasa.
Ituri, a province in eastern Congo about the size of West Virginia, is the epicenter of the outbreak, with about 94% of recorded cases in Congo. And according to Congolese health authorities, the virus has now spread to half of the province's health zones. Now, it's hard to gauge the scale of this crisis, but there are clues that suggest it's much larger than the official figures suggest.
Emmett Livingstone reporting. You're listening to NPR. Tonight is Game 3 of the NBA Finals. The New York Knicks lead the series against the San Antonio Spurs 2-0. They will host the Spurs and President Trump in Madison Square Garden tonight. Mayor Mamdani will also attend. A watch party planned for Knicks fans outside Madison Square Garden has now been canceled for security reasons. Other watch parties will go ahead. Broadway's highest honors, the Tony Awards, were handed out last night at Radio City Music Hall in New York. The event's host was the pop star Pink. Jeff London reports the honors were spread widely among many events.
If there was one clear winner of the night, it was the revival of Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. The atmospheric production set in a garage picked up 6 Tonys, including Best Revival of a Play. Elsewhere, the awards were more evenly spread. Ragtime picked up 4 awards, including Best Musical Revival, while Cats, the Jellicle Ball, picked up 3. Schmigadoon won 4 awards, including Best Musical. But the Lost Boys picked up 4 awards, too. Best Play went to Liberation. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
Officials in the Philippines say at least 32 people have been killed after an earthquake hit the ocean just off the southern part of the country. Its magnitude was 7.8. Officials in the Philippines say there have been a swarm of aftershocks. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jarl and Pamela Moan, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms. Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Last Monday, June 1st, thousands of New Yorkers received notices that their monthly food benefits might end due to new work requirements that kicked in this March. It's the latest in a series of changes limiting eligibility and access to the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, which nearly 3 million residents rely on to feed their families. Jenny Zhao covers social services and public benefits for New York Focus, and she's compiled information for SNAP recipients in New York seeking clarity on the change and how it will affect their benefits. Jenny, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we've talked before about this, but let's remind folks, what are these new work rules for SNAP in New York?
Right. So last year, Congress passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and in that were a lot of changes and cuts to the Federal Food Assistance Program, also known as SNAP. And so one of the big changes came into effect this spring, and they essentially require a lot of these recipients to prove that they are working or volunteering a certain amount of hours per month as a condition of keeping their benefits.
And so if you are a beneficiary of SNAP, what would someone have to do for the new work rule?
So it largely depends on how much SNAP benefits you receive per month and what type of work activity you're doing. If you're working, you would have to work at least 20 hours a week or about 80 hours a month. But if you are participating, let's say, in a volunteer program, which has to be approved by your particular county, the amount of hours you actually need to perform will be based on what your monthly SNAP benefit is divided by your hourly wage in your area. So the minimum wage local to your area in New York State. So that's a little bit complicated, but for example, if you receive $300 each month in SNAP benefits and the local minimum wage in your area is $16 per hour, you'd only actually have to complete 18 hours of volunteer work each month. So it really depends on your particular situation and how you are trying to qualify your work each month.
It is sounding a little complicated. And if somebody in the household received a notice mentioning something called the Able-Bodied Adults Without Dependents Work Requirement Work Rules, what does that mean?
Yeah. It gets very jargony very quickly. And basically, if you received a notice at any point this past spring, so this would go back until March of this year, you might have received something called ABOD. It's Able-Bodied Adults Without Dependents, ABAWD. And that's the name of the particular work rules. It's basically these work rules impact adults ages 18 to 64 who do not have a dependent under 14 years old. And there's a whole long list of criteria on who would be considered a quote-unquote ABOD or so-called able-bodied adult without dependents. But this is basically the federal government's sort of way to ensure that adults who are, that they believe are able to work, are working as a condition of receiving these monthly food benefits.
So if someone is able to work and meet the monthly requirement, then what do they have to do in terms of reporting? What does that mean for them?
Right. So as a result of this new change that kicked in March, every month, you have to get in touch with your local county social service department and essentially provide them with proof, documentation, that you've met these monthly requirements. If you are unable to meet these monthly requirements for any 3 months during a reporting period, you could then be at risk of losing your SNAP. And that's what happened in June. Individuals who were unable to meet the work requirements for the months of March, April, and May might have received a notice earlier this month saying their food benefits would be discontinued and or their case was closed. And that is because of that 3 month limit that exists. It's called the time limit. And so in that particular instance, this is a first-time situation in New York State. New York State has not had to deal with this work rule. For a lot of folks, it might be confusing because they've never heard of this before, even if they've been on the SNAP program for years.
Right. And then to further confuse it, the 3 months don't have to be back-to-back. You can
Correct.
Meet them in different
yes.
ways. Okay.
There's a lot of fine print. There's a lot of fine print with this, but they do not have to be consecutive. The current reporting period ends in September. So it goes through the end of September. It resets in October. So if you are unable to meet the work rule for any 3 month period starting from March all the way through September, you could lose your SNAP benefits. But then the sort of the time resets in October, October 2026. But the next reporting period lasts 3 years. So if you then are unable to meet this 3 month limit from October 2026 all the way over to the next 3 years after that, you would also lose your SNAP benefits. These rules are meant to be very, very strict. A lot of advocates are concerned basically that the difficulty behind this work rule is meant to disenroll people from SNAP. It is meant to drive down overall enrollment in SNAP. So if you're thinking, if you're listening to me explain this and you're like, wow, that's really complicated and very strict and severe, that is sort of kind of been the idea behind these work rules and the criticism that has been lobbed on these work rules not being easy to work with.
That may be the point. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Jenny Zhao from New York Focus about the new SNAP rules in New York. She's compiled an extensive list of what you need to know. If folks haven't received any notices, Jenny, about changes
right.
to the SNAP benefits, then what does that mean? Does that mean that...
Right.
Yeah.
It could mean a couple different things. So ideally, if you haven't received any notices, you know, mentioning work rules and you are a SNAP recipient, it's most likely because your local social service department has determined that you're not required to follow these new work rules. And there's a long list of criteria that would make you what's called exempt from the work rules, which means that you do not have to comply with the work rules. So for instance, this includes people who are pregnant, if you receive disability benefits, if you're currently receiving unemployment benefits, if you participate in a drug or alcohol addiction treatment program, or if you're enrolled in school or college at least half time, right? So there's a long list of criteria that could also make you exempt from these rules. And, you know, what we said earlier is this new work rule is all about people who are able to work. And the big caveat with that is that you have to also be able to work the full amount of time that is determined that you are able to work per month. So, example, if you, for whatever reason, are able to work, but your work is very inconsistent. Perhaps you have a health or medical condition, a health or physical condition that limits how much time you're able to work per month. You might still be eligible for an exemption. And I would highly encourage you to get in touch with your local social service department and go through the process of getting an exemption, which means usually just filling out a form with a healthcare professional who is basically going to fill out the form for you and attest that, you know, you are not able to work this certain amount of hours per month. And then therefore you don't have to comply with these new work rules. So there is that whole exemption process that's eligible if you think that you're not going to be able to comply with this monthly requirement.
And are the local social service departments being proactive and looking for exemptions, or is that upon the SNAP beneficiary to go and tell them, like, hey, I receive disability benefits, or I get unemployment benefits, or other ways that exempt someone?
Right. So New York is one of those states where social service administration is done on a county by county basis, which means there's big differences between what individual counties in the state are able to do. For example, in New York City, they have a lot more resources. And so the agency that is responsible for overseeing this, they are able to do a lot of data work on their back end to sort of proactively identify who they think might be exempt, right? And they have a lot of staff that are able to maybe connect with people. That's not the case for a lot of other smaller counties that I've been speaking with across the state, where they might lack technical capabilities to be able to proactively identify people who might be exempt, or they might not have the staffing to really properly and fully screen everyone for exemptions. But regardless of the case, if you are a SNAP recipient and you have been notified that you are required to meet these monthly rules and you think that's a mistake, that you really should be exempt from the rules, I would highly encourage you to get in touch with your social service department directly, explain your situation, and ask for the process to get an exemption.
And
because a lot of people are falling through the cracks is what I'm hearing, because this is the first time counties are having to do this. There might be a lot of administrative errors. People are still being trained on how to do this properly. So I always tell people, do your best to be proactive so that you can keep your benefits.
It's only been a week since this change, June 1st. So what are you hearing? You're hearing that some folks are falling through the cracks?
I'm hearing a lot of sort of confusion. So some individuals might have received a notice, back in March. They might have vaguely remembered seeing some written notice saying about these work rules and maybe disregarding that notice and then getting another notice in June saying their case is closed, and then them wondering what the hell is going on. So this is a new situation. And, a lot of the notices that did go out earlier this spring, they weren't, from what I understand, the most easiest notices to understand. A lot of them contained legal requirements that the state and counties had to share. So they weren't written in like the easiest plain language, easiest to understand words. So there's been a lot of confusion on that front. There's also been a lot of confusion from what I can hear about people who thought they were exempt and then being later told that they are not exempt. There are instances of people sending in their monthly documentation each month and still getting letters saying that their SNAP benefits are being closed and terminated. So that indicates to me that there are probably a lot of administrative errors and miscommunication going on, which is not uncommon when you have, such a significant shift like this to a program that has been operating, for the most part, under very similar rules for many decades now. So this is a huge, huge seismic shift in terms of policy. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of mistakes happening on all ends, on both the SNAP recipients and on the agency side as well.
And if someone has lost those SNAP benefits, how can they get food?
Right. So right now, if you are food insecure, which means that you're, for whatever reason, whether it's your SNAP benefits or any financial reason, I would highly recommend people contact your nearest food pantry. Food pantries are all across the state. They offer free groceries to individuals. We link to resources on our article on where you can look up food pantries near you. There are also community kitchens. There are also community food fridges where you can actually take whatever you need. There are also local mutual aid groups throughout the state that might be offering assistance, as well as your local elected official may also be aggregating resources in your local area. There's a long list of potential food resources available. It just might take a little bit of searching and a little bit of troubleshooting to be able to find out what that looks like for you.
That's Jenny Zo from New York Focus talking about the new SNAP rules. The extensive research and reporting that she did is at nysfocus.com. Thanks for helping us understand this. And I apologize for mispronouncing your name earlier, but thank you for being here and sorting this out. Lots of acronyms, lots of confusion, but very, very clear to some folks. And if you need those resources, again, nysfocus.com. Thanks, Jenny.
Thanks so much.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, after Albany's legislative session is over, the debate continues over what lawmakers accomplished. We'll hear from For the Many on why that organization says grassroots organizing delivered key wins and why advocates remain frustrated over housing, immigration, and tax policy. That's coming up. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
As climate change worsens, protecting a threatened species' natural habitat like the frosted flatwood salamander isn't always enough. So some ecologists are collecting and hatching its eggs in captivity to give them a greater chance of survival.
Our ultimate goal in species recovery is to put these animals back on the landscape. And in order to do that, you need animals.
Hear that story on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, this afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The New York State Legislature concluded its 2026 session on Friday, ending months of debate over housing affordability, immigration policy, climate action, and the state budget. While lawmakers approved measures including limits on cooperation with federal immigration enforcement, energy rebates for consumers, and a temporary moratorium on AI data centers, critics say the session fell short on some of the state's most pressing challenges. For the Many, a grassroots advocacy organization that organizes across the Hudson Valley and New York State, argues that lawmakers failed to advance major priorities, including stronger protections for immigrants, expanded rent stabilization options, and new taxes on billionaires to help offset federal funding cuts. Joining us now is Jenny Kuttner of For the Many to discuss the group's assessment of the legislative session and what comes next. Jenny, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tim.
For the Many is calling this year's legislative session, and I quote, an unacceptable waste. From your perspective, what was missing from Albany this year?
Yeah. So certainly there were some important measures that got pushed through this year in Albany. But I think one important thing to note about this session is that it was essentially hollowed out by Governor Hochul's abuse of the budget process, which is something that has happened repeatedly. For the fifth year in a row, following a really frustrating familiar blueprint at this point, the governor held the state budget hostage for 2 months in order to force through an agenda that we think really sells out working class New Yorkers for the sake of her billionaire donors. The state budget is due every year on April 1st. And again, repeatedly, the governor has treated that April 1st deadline as more of a suggestion than a hard deadline. And so instead of getting that budget passed on time, she held it up until the end of May, blocking efforts to raise taxes on billionaires and corporations, even though 71% of New Yorkers and both houses of the legislature support taxing the rich. She refused to put a stop to informal collaboration with ICE, even though we know that immigration agents rely on that informal support from local law enforcement in order to carry out their increasingly intense attacks on our communities. And, you know, in her biggest win and arguably our biggest loss as a state, she used the budget process to absolutely gut our landmark climate law, the CLCPA, which is going to leave the state much more dependent on volatile fossil fuels at a moment when we are seeing oil prices just skyrocket. And at a moment that we're heading into what is arguably going to be one of the hottest, most destructive summers of our lives. There were some important wins on immigration, which we can certainly talk about in a moment. But I think the failure to pass New York for All and offer the full protections that were on the table for millions of immigrant New Yorkers is certainly a major failure. And For the Many was really fighting for the REST Act, the Rent Emergency Stabilization for Tenants Act, which would have given upstate communities like ours just the option to opt into rent stabilization. You know, it's a cost-free measure that would have simply given communities upstate and on Long Island the same opportunities to freeze rent, potentially, if they want to, and stabilize their communities in the way that New York City has had the ability to do for over 50 years now. And then, of course, there's the failure to tax the rich at a moment when Trump's big, beautiful bill, which we certainly have another name for internally that I don't know if I can say on the radio, but that bill is going to leave millions of New Yorkers without health care and without SNAP benefits. We have over 120 billionaires living in this state and some major corporations that are headquartered here. And if we were to tax those billionaires and corporations, according to the plan that was put forth, we could have generated $45 billion to fill those gaps and make sure that folks can still go to the doctor, that they can still buy groceries, that all of our basic needs are taken care of. And that just didn't happen, which is certainly something that we're going to continue organizing around, especially given that the vast majority of New Yorkers support this.
I want to ask you a little bit more about some of those other issues like immigration and climate. But first, one thing, just want to let the listener know there's a little bit of static or crackle on Jenny's line. It's not your radio. No worries, Jenny. We can still hear you. There's just
sorry
like a
about
little.
That.
There you go. For the Many also points to several victories. What do you see as the most significant accomplishments of the session?
Yeah. So, there were definitely some wins this session, and we really do think that that is thanks to, you know, the handful of grassroots champions that we have in the legislature, a few of them from here in the Hudson Valley, and more critically to the pressure that our movement across the state built. You know, in March, we joined 1,000 other folks from across the state fighting to tax the rich, pass New York for All to protect immigrants, and protect the state's climate law. And we know that that pressure is why we were able to end formal agreements with ICE and pass things like the MELT Act, which is going to ban face coverings for immigration agents and add some accountability to this horrible, violent process that we are seeing play out. We also were able to pass Dignity Not Detention, so immigration agents, federal immigration enforcers are no longer going to be able to use our local jails to kidnap and detain our neighbors. And on climate, you know, while Hochul did end up largely gutting the climate law, we are going to see $1 billion allocated for home energy rebates that are going to help New Yorkers pay their crushing utility bills. So we saw a few wins here and there. And the reason we say that this is because of grassroots organizing is because we know from early in the budget process that Governor Hochul especially wanted to do the bare minimum or nothing on these issues. She did not want to move on immigration. She signaled that very, very early on. And this is only because of the thousands and thousands of New Yorkers who made phone calls, who wrote emails, who knocked doors, who showed up in Albany to demand that something get done and that we stop ICE from encroaching on our communities That's why something happened. It's not because of the many bought off politicians in the legislature who otherwise demonstrated that they have very little political will to step up and protect us. It is because we demanded that they protect us, and we demanded that they do something that really anything got done this year. And it is because of the folks that we have elected who have been willing to fight for us. You know, my assembly member where I live in the Hudson Valley, assembly member Sarah Hanna Shretza, has been an incredible champion for working class New Yorkers and for everyday kitchen table issues because we elected her. She is someone who came from the community and who many folks went door to door to elect. And she reports back to us. She knows who she works for. She is not bought out by corporations. She does not take corporate money. And that has a lot to do with the way that our legislators vote and how willing they are to step up for us during the session.
What does that tell you about the current relationship between voters and elected officials if you're feeling that some of the successes in this session were due to this grassroots pressure rather than leadership from Albany?
It tells us that a lot of folks in the legislature, many of whom are Democrats, are really out of touch with what's going on in their districts. I would say that's something we really saw play out with the REST Act. We had a legislator who declined to support the bill, even though her district, the same night that this was getting voted on, voted unanimously to pass good cause eviction and protect folks from being evicted from their homes. So there is a real hunger for more tenant protections and more measures that are going to increase affordable housing. And yet we are seeing our electeds in the legislature fail to support measures like that on the state level. And that just shows that they either don't know what's going on in their districts and aren't paying attention, or they just don't care. Regardless, we know that we need to have the votes in place to pass things like the REST Act next year. And if we don't have those votes right now, which it seems like we do not, this is why we have primaries. This is why we get to have other candidates in the ring and elect other folks. You know, what we've been saying is that legislators get to make choices when we send them to Albany, but voters get to make choices too. And if our legislators are going to continue to go to Albany only to return home with nothing, we are going to elect other legislators to do the job for us. The crises that we are facing are too serious. There are too many New Yorkers who are wondering if they should pay their utility bill and keep the lights on or the heat on in the winter, or if they're going to be able to pay their rent so that they can stay in that home that they're worried about heating or cooling. The issues we're facing are just too real for our legislators to not take them seriously, which is what it feels like happened in Albany this year. You know, it feels like we're seeing folks playing politics when the consequences of their decisions are just so very real and so very detrimental to many people's lives.
You mentioned those energy rebates. The state approved $1 billion for those rebates. Do you think that's a meaningful step forward, or does it fall short of addressing the broader affordability concerns that you're talking about there?
I think it's a little bit of a both and on the energy rebates. You know, on the one hand, I want to acknowledge that this really is going to help many New Yorkers pay utility bills that have just become absolutely crushing. I think the stat is something like 1 in 4 New Yorkers. You should probably fact check me on this, but I think 1 in 4 New Yorkers is considered energy burdened, meaning they pay just a disproportionate amount of their household income for utilities. In the Hudson Valley, that number is even higher. And we know that any money that's going to be back in people's pockets to help them pay utility bills is helpful. And at a moment when the governor has gutted the climate law to make us more dependent on fossil fuels, we know that that's going to continue to raise our rates. And she had the audacity to blame the climate law for increasing rates, even though we know that that is absolutely not the case. We know that that has much more to do with the global price of oil and those, that volatility. To me, the acknowledgement with the energy rebates of energy prices being too high and folks not being able to pay them, that sort of acknowledges that there is something really wrong and really broken about our utility system. But simply allocating money for that for 1 year is not going to address those much deeper concerns. That's why it, for the many, you know, one of the other bills that we're fighting for and that we really hope to pass next session is the Hudson Valley Power Authority, which would buy out our monopoly utility provider here in the Mid-Hudson Valley, Central Hudson, and turn it into a state-owned corporation. It would be non-for-profit, it would be transparent, it would lower our bills, and it would, for the long term, give us cleaner energy at a more affordable price and actually be the longer-term solution that we need to the utility woes that many, many New Yorkers are facing.
Quick fact check here. The energy burden defined as a percentage of a household's gross income spent on home energy costs with anything over 6% considered excessive. And according to the latest reporting from the Acadia Center, more than 2 million New Yorkers spend more than 6% of their income on electricity and gas. So want to thank you for joining us, Jenny Kuttner, from For the Many, the grassroots movement. The information for that group is at forthemany.org. Jenny, thanks so much.
Thanks, Tim.
After the break, invasive plants, forest pests, and aquatic hitchhikers are putting pressure on Catskill's ecosystems. We'll speak with the Catskill Regional Invasive Species Partnership about what's at stake and what you could do to help protect the region's natural resources. This is Radio Catskill.
New Mexico's Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham led her state to some remarkable firsts.
The first state to provide child care at no cost, to have universal child care. How are you paying for it?
We didn't just do it overnight, so we did a series of investments.
As her final term comes to an end, we'll talk with the governor about how states are changing American lives for the better when the federal government won't. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. This week marks Invasive Species Awareness Week, an annual effort to educate residents about plants, insects, and aquatic species that are threatening native ecosystems across New York. In the Catskills, invasive species can impact forests and waterways, wildlife, habitat, and even local economies. To learn more about the challenges facing the region and what residents can do to help, we're joined by John Thompson, director of the Catskill Regional Invasive Species Partnership, or CRISP. Hi, John. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
This is New York's 13th annual Invasive Species Awareness Week. Why dedicate an entire week to invasive species, and why does this issue deserve this attention right now?
Well, invasive species are one of the greatest threats to New York State's biodiversity. It also threatens aspects of our economy and, in some cases, human health or human well-being. So it's very important that we address invasive species as well as we can, and it's up to all of the public to be involved in helping to stop the spread of invasive species.
I have to admit, I may not think about invasive species very often. I probably should. What are invasive species, though, and why are they such a concern in a region like the Catskills and the Hudson Valley?
Yeah, so New York State, in the DEC environmental regulations, identify invasive species as having two features or two aspects. And one is that it's new to an ecosystem. And the second is that it causes some type of harm. And as I said, that harm might be to the ecosystem, it might be to the economy, or it might be to human health. So in order to address invasive species, New York State uses funding from the State Environmental Protection Fund and funds partnerships for regional invasive species management, of which CRISP is one. There are seven others in New York State. So wherever you are in New York State, there's people that are working to help to stop the spread of invasive species, help to raise awareness about invasive species. And New York Invasive Species Awareness Week is a great way to do that, to get people to focus on it.
And CRISP is focused on the overall state of the Catskills and the forests and waterways and ecosystems. How would you describe that here when it comes to the invasive species pressure today?
Yeah, so with the Catskills, I mean, it's one of the areas of high biodiversity in New York State. Of course, we have great natural resources here, lovely mountains, wonderful streams and rivers and ponds, and even have reservoirs that are helping to, are contributing 90% of the the drinking water for New York City and some of the cities along the way, they get provided with clean drinking water from the Catskills and the west of Hudson system. So there are a lot of important reasons to protect the ecology of this area, and that's why we're working here. And Chris works over 7 counties. It's all of Delaware County, all of Otsego County, all of Schoharie County, then it's most of Greene County, most of Ulster County, almost all of Sullivan County, and then a little sliver of Orange County. So we're covering about 3.3 million acres and trying to manage species within those, within that area.
What invasive species are currently causing the greatest concern for you in the Catskills region?
Yeah, so the ones that are high priority for us, a lot of times we're trying to anticipate what species might be moving into our area, and then looking at those species that have just moved into our area, there's opportunities a lot of times to be able to eradicate a species before it becomes widespread. And then there's species that just move really really fast and have overspread our region. People might be familiar with beech leaf disease. That's a disease caused by a nematode. It causes banding of beech leaves and causes them eventually to curl up and turn black and fall off the trees. So that's a major concern in an area of the CRSP region. It's 74% forested. That's one of our, the greatest, most important resources that we have in the Catskills is our forest. And to risk losing one of the most abundant trees could be a really major impact for our forests.
And you mentioned the beech issue. Are there other invasive plants that are having an impact in forests and natural areas?
Yes, there are, and there are ones that are just getting established, and that's what we're mostly working on to try to eradicate ones before they spread too far. An example of that would be mile-a-minute. That's a vine. It can grow 6 inches a day. It has little barbs on it, and it reproduces throughout the season, so it produces a lot of seeds throughout the season, and we have a number of sites where we're working on that and trying to identify any new sites for that species. We work on a lot of terrestrial species and also a lot of aquatic species. So we have summer crews out that are managing upland species. And then we have a crew that's also going out and managing aquatic invasive species like water chestnut that people might be familiar with, frog bit, and several others in some of our streams and ponds throughout the Catskills and CRSP region.
You know, people had a lot of attention, were paying a lot of attention to the spotted lanternfly, got a lot of good PR there, I suppose. But there are so many others that you're mentioning, and folks can find out more at CatskillInvasive.com, which is the website for CRSP. Are you organizing any events or activities during this Invasive Species Awareness Week that will help highlight some of these other invasives that are happening?
Yes, and people can find out more about those events on our website, which you just mentioned, CatskillInvasives.com/events. We have 2 events that are coming up on Saturday. One of them is a volunteer work day at the Ashokan Rail Trail. At the Ashokan Station Trailhead. We've been in an area that was where the ash trees were killed by emerald ash borer, and invasive plants have moved in. We're removing those invasive plants, and we're planting native trees to try to restore the forest that is there. We're working with the New York City Department of Environmental Protection on that, and it's open to any of the public, anybody that would like to come and lend a hand. And then we also have an event that's in Cooperstown. We'll be pulling an aquatic invasive species called frog bit. As I said, more details are on our website. You could find out more about what we're doing on our website, and you can register on our website also.
John, before we go, what is it that someone could do if they're out hiking, boating, you know, gardening, camping out there, they spot a suspicious plant, an insect or aquatic species? What should they do?
They could take a picture of it and email it to me. My contact information is on the website, or you can send it to invasives@catskillcenter.org, and that will come to me. If there's any species that you're not sure what it is, or a plant or a bug, you can send it to me if you think it's an invasive species. You could also sign up for IMAP Invasives. There's a website called nyimapinvasives.org where people can report invasive species. It's an app you can download to your phone where you take a picture and you upload it, and then someone will verify that it's a species that you thought it was, and I'll get an alert that you saw an invasive species at a certain place. So those are two simple things that people can do. We also do a lot of events throughout the year, and people are welcome to come to any of our public events, and we'd be more than happy to teach them about invasive species.
That's John Thompson. He is the director of the Catskill Regional Invasive Species Partnership, or CRISP, at the Catskill Center in Arkville. He's the leading local expert in conservation, specializing in the management, early detection, and monitoring of invasive species across the Catskills in New York State. And now you have a direct line to him if you find something suspicious. John, thank you so much for informing us and for all you're doing there.
Thank you, Tim. I really appreciate the time. Have a great day.
You too. We'll take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week's Retro Cocktail Hour has stereo overstimulation, the exotic sounds of the Voodoo Five, and a weekend in Waikiki with the Tiki Yaki Orchestra. I'm Darryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
So here's the deal. Public radio is now operating without federal funding, and your support matters more than ever. One way to help is to donate that car, truck, or old motorcycle in your driveway. You clear out some space and help keep trusted news coverage alive in your community. The process? Simple. Free, even tax deductible. Just head to this station's website and help us keep this work going together.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at wjffradio.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. And you didn't think we wouldn't get any local economic perspective on a Monday without James B., did you? Working 9 to 5. James B. Huntington is our local economist and author. It joins us now, as he does most Mondays. James B., hello.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, let's zoom back to Friday. There was that jobs report that came out. It looked like it was pretty good. What was in it?
Well, let's see. It was a mixed bag, really. The headline news was the number of jobs, a.k.a. net new non-farm payroll positions, which was over double the published estimate, 172,000, rather. But the rest of the report really didn't follow through with that. We had seasonally unadjusted unemployment up 0.1%. We had long-term joblessness, or people out 27 weeks or longer, up 200,000 to 2 million. We had the number of those working part-time for economic reasons or keeping shorter hours positions while continuing to look for longer hours ones lost 100,000, but is still high at 4.8 million. Labor force participation stayed the same. The employment population ratio did, though, gain 0.1%, 59.1%. Average hourly private non-farm payroll earnings stayed about the same as inflation, going up 12 cents to $37.53. And the AJSN, or American Job Shortage number, which shows how many more positions could be quickly filled if all were easy to get, that gained 700,000, which is in the wrong direction, to 17.2 million. So overall, we really didn't make any progress. We're not really losing the employment battle, but we're not improving at it either. So we didn't do anything good overall in May.
How is that translating on the local level? You have unemployment figures for our listening area, which I think the latest are, what do you have, from April?
Yes, this is April. They sped things up a bit in the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So I have April's. These are two-month changes because March was normally the month we'd get now, but now I got it soon enough to get April. We have Sullivan County with 3.7% unemployment, down 1.1%. Orange County also 3.7%, down 0.8%. Ulster 3.5%, down 1.0%. Wayne County 4.0%, down 1.7%. And then Pike County 4.7%, down 1.2%. So nationally, the unadjusted unemployment numbers, which these are also, was 4%, down 0.7%. So all of our five local counties did better percentage-wise than the national thing did. So we're doing well once again. We had a little doubt there, but it's really much good to see these things. We have Pike County lagging, but everyone else is at or below, usually below the national figure.
Well, let's turn to things that are really increasing, it seems, all over the place, from your phone calls to your personal electronic devices, your identity being scammed or stolen. What are some small clues that are out there that could help you see if you're being scammed or someone's trying to take your identity?
Yes, often this comes through as things that you might not notice. There are not huge deals or anything. But first, if you get small card charges you don't recognize, that can be a sign that they're testing your credit card, that they have access to it, and they want to make sure it really works. Second, missing mail. If you don't have something, if you're getting mail things from creditors or companies or business-related things here, it might be a sign that somebody is working on stealing your identity, especially if you get something like a USPS move validation letter. If you get some kind of mail that looks like it's a mistake, it may not be a mistake. It may be a sign of something very bad. Third, unexpected IRS letters, the same kind of thing. If you're getting something like a financial form for a company you never worked for, or something that doesn't really make mistakes. If you get something of a big sign is if you try to file your tax return, if you did that and found out that a return is already in file. These things are usually not mistakes. These things are indications that somebody else has filed one there also. Credit report changes, okay. Anything on any new accounts, anything on your credit report that wasn't there before that appears suddenly. Medical bills for care you never received, maybe an indication that somebody else is using your information. And unrequested login prompts. When I get called for a two-factor authorization thing where I key in something and they say they're going to email me and a six-digit number, I always get these things. If you get them and if you didn't do anything there, that's a real indication that somebody else is in there. So there are things you can do. You can, if you get these things, first, contact the company. Second, you can report it on identitytheft.gov. Third, you can get extra identity theft insurance if it's really bad and you're really concerned. You save every record at least for a while and put a fraud alert on your credit file and lock down any exposed accounts that you have. Make sure that nobody else can do anything unless they're using your two-factor authorization.
Mm-hmm. All right. Something to always stay alert for. Let's move on to tipping. Are Americans reaching a tipping point when it comes to those tips on the screens there?
Yeah. So this is an article came out. A recent Pop Menu survey found that 78% of consumers think that tipping practices have become ridiculous. 74% have noticed restaurants raising the suggested tip amounts on digital payment screens. But still, we have 59% of the people in the survey saying they felt compelled to leave a tip of some sort. Often it's appropriate. We're hearing this called tip creep, things where people are getting hustled for tips when they're being handed a cup of coffee at the to-go counter, and that's not necessarily appropriate. 20% is still just fine in the industry. It's a solid high-end tip now. So If they try to get you for 25, well, your service had better have been pretty exceptional to call for that. And notice that you have support from people on the restaurant ends, that a lot of them, when they give you these things, are just uncomfortable with that, and they know that they shouldn't be doing these things, describing it as awkward moments. So, yes, I think the best thing you can do is enter your own custom tip. Do what you think you can do. And there's nothing embarrassing about 15% for a full restaurant service. And there's nothing embarrassing with tipping nothing when you just pick something up at a counter. My own rule is still that if I order something while standing up, there's no tip. And that wipes out a lot of these situations where they're trying to do things. And I'm certainly not going to feel guilt from a machine. And the employees maybe probably will be totally understanding and are not behind some of these changes.
Yeah, it all comes down to personal preference. We're getting crunched for time here, so let's move to the numbers. What were the prices this morning, and how did they change?
Okay, ugh. Gold $42.85 the ounce, down $2.07, three straight substantial losses, down almost $400. In 4 weeks, silver $66.84, down $8.57, did worse. The ratio between silver and gold is now 64-1, doing even worse. Gold Dow Jones Industrial Average 50,867, down 165, which isn't bad by the standards of this week. So it kept most of its gain, but NASDAQ definitely did not keep its recent gains. 25,709, down 1,264. And I'm not seeing anything terrifying in the news otherwise about AI, which is usually what drives NASDAQ these days. So I don't see it. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $94.58, up $3.56 more. More tensions, more things going on in the Gulf, but it's still in its low range. It's over 100 when it's bad. Bitcoin, 63,447, down over 9,000. So that was over 17. It was 8,700 4 weeks ago. British pound 1.3315, down $1.05. The euro 1.1503, down about the same as the pound. Both of these doing remarkably poorly. And the Japanese 100 yen finally dropped down from 63 cents to 62. It could be the lowest in months, if not years. So overall, this was a skunk week with everything going down except oil. Downtimes for everything. Who knows where we're going from here? Well, that's there may be market manipulation going on.
Well, we'll turn to you next Monday for some clarity. James B. Huntington, local author and economist, taking a local look at the economy for us. Thanks, James B.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Tim Bruno, thanks for listening. We'll be here tomorrow. Hope you are too.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Vintage House, selling vintage clothing, records, books, and toys from the past. A walk back in time on Main Street in Jeffersonville and at vintagehousejville.com. And from listeners like you.
This is Cooper R. Grace, KG, right here in the place to be, WJFF Radio Catskill Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9. 2 hours of great music, jazz, funk, blues. I got mellow grooves to help you unwind, exciting rhythms to help you cut loose. Join me Tuesday night for the Music Emporium, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill. Mostly sunny and pleasant today, a high 77, clear 49 tonight. Tomorrow it's going to be sunny, very warm, high 84. And then we're looking at heavy thunderstorms and showers on Thursday. On Point is next.